Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
It is that time, everybody. Every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we bring in the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for a conversation. He joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, Michael.
What's happening?
How was the weekend?
It was great, except for the weather. I mean, we had Seattle weather. It was like 48 and raining every day.
Oh. Wow. All right. Boy,
yeah.
It's just dark times out there. I'm seeing Joel Embiid is listed as doubtful with a right knee issue for Game 5, even though the Sixers are up 3-1 on Washington, but... Is there panic in the streets out there?
Not panic. There's concern. Embiid is, you know, he's the best player on the team. He is a, you know, a top 5 to 7 player in the NBA, an MVP candidate this year. What you're worried about is how bad is the knee? Is this, you know, he's very injury prone throughout his career. So how badly is he hurt? How is it? Is it, you know, they can beat them Game 5 at home without him. But if he's going to miss any appreciable time, then you start worrying about what happens against the Hawks and, more importantly, what happened against Brooklyn.
How are your Phillies doing out there? I can look
in
the standings.
They are horrific.
No way. 61-1.
11 of 15, and they are playing some of the least inspired baseball I have ever seen.
So you put those signs away really, really quickly, the 162-0.
They are infuriating. I think it was Sunday. There was a play, so they have a third baseman named Alec Bohm, who looks like a giraffe trying to play third base. He doesn't belong at third base. He's too tall. So there's a pop fly hit up the line in Tampa. He comes running over because they've got a shift on, overruns the ball at the last second, stops, and lunges back to try to catch the darn thing. He looked like they took some guy who was working at McDonald's and said, "Here, pal, play Major League third base. See how it goes." It was a perfect metaphor for the way they're playing. Inept, awkward, and just bad baseball. Other than that, I'm delighted.
Hey, what do you think about what seems to be gaining more and more traction through the season? And Dave and I were talking to the play-by-play guy at the Padres, and we were just talking to him about the offensive numbers. They're just terrible across baseball, and the Mariners were, at the time, the worst in all of baseball. May still be there, I'm not sure. But just in terms of average and strikeouts and – you know, I was talking about how analytics have been a part of it. The approach at the plate is totally different, the way we view strikeouts. But he brought up the foreign substances being used by pitchers these days and the fact that it's not just, you know, SPF out there. It's not just Vaseline. It's something being specifically created for pitchers to use out there. And now all of a sudden, you know, on the heels of that conversation, we saw what happened with the Cardinals and Mike Schilt coming out saying, you know, hey, they're basically flipping the middle finger to baseball and nobody's doing anything. And we saw Josh Donaldson saying, "I've got a list of guys who I know are cheating." I mean, it's interesting that it's becoming such a hot topic, yet it's also something that's sort of been embraced and celebrated by baseball through the decades. You know, the spitter and Gaylord Perry and Vaseline, and it's sort of that accepted form of cheating that's been, I guess, glamorized on some level throughout the decades of baseball, but now it's problematic. What do you think?
Well, we talked about this last week, and as I said, Tyler Kepner of the New York Times was on this a few weeks ago, and I have no doubt. Baseball is about, right now, pitching in baseball is about one thing, and that's spin rate, and how much can you get the ball to spin to make it drop. So the two-seamer comes in as a sinker. You've got sliders that are hellacious. Even a four-seam fastball, which used to be just, it's me against you, bad on bad, has late movement on it now. And there has to be something going on with this. There has to be something to it. And Major League Baseball, here's the difference. After they came out of the strike in 94 and they let everybody juice by turning their back to it and being too scared to negotiate with the players' union about getting real drug testing in, that was trying to get runs so people would pay attention to the game. Now you've got a confluence of people that really don't have an approach to hitting anymore other than trying to hit a home run. Watch a hitter with two strikes on him. It used to be you choke up a little bit, you go into protective mode, anything that's near the plate, you're either going to try to take the other way or you're just going to foul off till you get a better pitch. Now it's, I don't care. Nobody's telling me that a strikeout is bad, so if it's a 1-2 pitch and it's low and outside, I'm still going to try to jack it and pull it the other way, and I'm going to miss it by a foot, and nobody says to me, oh, you don't know how to hit. So the major league average this year is on par to be the lowest ever, the aggregate average. Think about that. The lowest ever. The pitchers are not, you know, they're cheating, but they're also more developed in terms of being able to throw fast and throw these nasty breaking pitches. And you've got hitters up there who aren't trying to hit singles and doubles. They're trying to hit home runs. It's almost too easy for some of these guys. If you've got a pitcher with an ERA over 4.50, that guy should 4.5, he should be in the minors because the hitters are almost helping him. And it's a disgrace. And the game is really, really going to suffer because if I'm under the age of 35, why do I don't watch this? I watch it right now because I'm an addict. If there were a methadone clinic for people who like baseball, I would gleefully go to it now so I could break my addiction to not only watching this boring sport, but this horrific team.
So you just hit something that I think is interesting in that you said, yeah, pitchers are cheating, but, and then you listed the other things. Is cheating cheating? I mean, you've got a very hard stance on the steroids, and you sort of put everybody in that same that same bucket. Is this equal to? Is this, do you look at this as less than? Because again, it's been sort of, you know, romanticized in the past, and it was known that it's going on, but sort of accepted. And that's kind of the funny quirk of baseball, what have you. But it's cheating. So is it a different level of cheating in your mind, or do you look at it as this is going to taint records that are going to be set and things like that?
Well, it's not going to taint records because, I mean, let's put it this way. In baseball right now, nobody can – even the casual fans can't tell you. You know, if you said to a casual baseball fan, who holds the record for most wins, I'd be astonished if that person could say Cy Young, 511 wins, okay? Mm-hmm. If you talked about home runs, all right, it's Balco Bonds, but he doesn't really count. But cheating is cheating. The difference between – now and the 90s when it was a free-for-all with steroids was the pitchers were taking steroids just as much as the hitters were. So everybody was some sort of laboratory experiment. Now you have the pitchers who are putting these tacky substances on their fingers and therefore on the ball to get a better grip, to get more spin. And at the same time, you've got hitters who really aren't up there really trying to hit. They're just trying to hit home runs. So they're it's about launch angle. And if I hear one more time, the ball went out at 113 miles an hour, who cares? A home run is a home run, whether it gets over the barely over the wall or whether it gets out like a meteor. So I think the game has a real problem, and I think that Rob Manfred is absolutely the wrong guy to be in charge right now. He has no guts. What he did to Houston showed it. And so he's somebody, if you're going to entrust the game to him and ask him to fix it, don't expect really good results.
Man, you mentioned the Balco scandal. Do you remember the guy's name who ran it?
Victor Conte.
Rob Anderson.
No, Bob is correct. Victor Conte.
Oh, okay. Well, Anderson was the guy who went to prison for Barry Bonds. I'd love to see his bank account and see, because he was the guy administering it. Victor Conte was the genius behind it.
Yeah.
Anderson was the distributor. Yeah, Victor Conte was the guy who made all the money off of it.
Bass player for Tower of Power.
Nice.
Yeah. You know why I know this? Because I went to him, El Hombre, when a buddy of mine and I went, and this was back when he was doing the snack thing, so it was scientific nutrition for advanced, very advanced conditioning.
Right.
So, you know, he would, you know, take your hair and, you know, and then it had to be hair that was like off the nape of your neck or somewhere else that doesn't get exposed to, you know, sunlight and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it measured what you were lacking in. And then they gave you these, you know, pills that were, you know, you could tell they made them there and put their own sticker on it. And I took it for a little while and I started to feel really good. And I thought, this is wrong. I mean,
I shouldn't feel this good.
I mean, it was labeled like magnesium and, you know, all these different.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, I've never taken stuff like that. But yeah, I remember thinking there's something wrong here. And he probably wasn't giving me steroids or anything like that. I never tested positive, that's for sure. But, you know, people during my career would have said to me, you need to get on steroids, not you well, look like you're
look,
on steroids. Look,
here's the thing you got to remember about. First of all, the cheaters have always been ahead of the testers. That's why there are laboratories that are still testing urine samples from the 2012 and 2016 Olympics. So
Yeah, but the testers have so much more money and stability, and the cheaters are out there, you know, without all of the support and everything. And then don't the testers then hire the cheaters to come and work for them?
Yeah, but then the cheaters are behind them. The most recent bit of testers are cheaters. And here's the thing you got to
remember. New cheaters being developed every day.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, look what happened to the gasoline supply on the East Coast back a couple weeks ago. Got hacked by some very sophisticated computer criminals, and they were basically brought, you know, the South Carolina and North Carolina to its knees because they were limiting the amount of the supply of gas. Here's the other thing too. Yeah, you can find stuff out with urine, but you can't always find out what you can also find out with blood or with hair. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you take an exam for an insurance policy, they're gonna ask you to, you know, get a physical, but they're also then gonna take some of your hair, because if you smoke, it's gonna stay with you for 6 to 8 weeks. So there are parts of the body that they're not testing right now. So you look at some of these guys that are winning and surviving and thriving when their careers should be over. And what are they doing? The old days of them looking like East German swimmers are over. It's a lot more subtle. It's a lot more synthetic. And I mean female swimmers. And it's a lot more synthetic, and it's a lot more nuanced, so the testers have to get blood, and then there's no collective bargaining agreement that will ever allow the leagues to take blood from the players.
Hey, what was your take on Naomi Osaka's withdrawal from the French Open? It's interesting to see different athletes chiming in on this, different people talking about it. What was your takeaway from all of this?
Well, first of all, the first thing she said was she doesn't like answering the same question over and over. That was the first thing she said. Then when she got blowback for that, then it became the mental health issue. Now, I have been on this program for several years, and you know what my stance is on mental health and the way we should be treating it. I am very much in favor of making sure that people understand that this is a serious condition that people need to be, you know, you can't put a cast on somebody when they have mental health, so you have to take what they say, and you have to believe it. So if this is difficult for her, that's fine, and I understand that the European press can be brutal, especially after you lose. Here's my concern, and this is moving forward as a journalist. If she is telling us that she doesn't want to go to press conferences because they make her uncomfortable, how far are we from when all athletes start to say, we don't want to do it? Now, she's the highest paid female athlete in the world, something like $52 million, okay? There are people making $12, $15 an hour doing jobs that every bit of it they hate. This makes her uncomfortable. So she loses a match and someone asks her, you had 19 unforced errors, what happened? And all of a sudden you're going to tell me that has ruined your confidence? Well, go to the sports psychologist that you're paying $150,000 to and figure that one out. You made 19 for unforced errors. The goalie for the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, who let in a soft goal in the Game 7 loss, to a Montreal team that Toronto scored 18 more points than in the regular season, had to stand up and answer questions about his play, and he did, okay? There are certain parts of being a professional athlete that you must do, and one of them is being available to the media. So if you don't want to do that, that's part of your job description. I don't like it. So what, we don't do anything that we don't like anymore? Is that how this works? My concern is that the athletes are going to start to say, we don't want to do this. It's going to be allowed. Now, the funny thing about it is ESPN will be all on her side for a couple of reasons. One big one is ESPN pays for its access. By becoming a broadcast and propaganda partner with the leagues and the athletes through the paying to broadcast the events, they get the access that they need. They then, because they want to make sure that their programming is well-received, don't broadcast anything that's negative. They promote the athletes because they want people to watch. So what they're going to do is say, oh, she has every right. They'll get to sit down with Naomi Osaka because they're going to broadcast the first few rounds of Wimbledon. This is a slippery slope. We're in 15 years not going to have athletes have to talk to the media anymore.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, maybe I'm wrong about this, Michael, but I mean, early on, it's to promote the product, right? So, like for the NFL, that's why they make, you know, they have those rules, you know, is to promote their product. But do they need that anymore? You know, that's the thing. And it's almost like the NFL teams, and I know here in Seattle, it's almost like they're not on the side of the media as much as they are on the side of just protecting the athletes.
No, they're not. No, they're protecting the brand. And here's the thing. They do need it. because here's why. Attendance is going to start dropping because the people that are paying for the tickets right now are going to be getting older and they don't want to pay for it. The younger people don't want to pay for it because they've got other things to do and they'll watch it on television or watch it through their VR goggles is what's going to happen. The streaming services are going to take over the broadcasting of it, which means that you're going to have a problem because Amazon and Hulu and other people are going to get in there and start grabbing content from ESPN. You're going to start to have this becoming a lot more virtual and a lot more people not staying away from the arenas. So they're going to need they still need the media to promote their product, and you know if you take Kate Fagan wrote a piece in Sports Illustrated this month about the WNBA, saying you're basically taking to task men for not watching the WNBA. She said, you know, you have to watch. There are compelling storylines, etc. She didn't give us one reason why to watch. She just told us why we were bad for not watching. The problem we're having with the media right now is that it's starting to side with the athletes because it's the only way the media can get access. If you are someone who is honest and just talking directly about what's going on, unless you have the team PR people running interference for you and press conferences and media availabilities that are mandated by the league, you're not going to get the access.
He is Il Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can follow him on Twitter, at Daily Hombre is where you find him. It's June 1st, which a lot of people in the NFL point to is sort of this big line. We're like, okay, now some big deals can take place, or cuts could take place, or trades could take place, and Aaron Rodgers is first and foremost in everybody's mind when this conversation comes up this season. What do you expect to happen? I mean, we've heard about Aaron, certainly Deshaun Watson. His issue is, I'm not sure what's going to happen with him based on all the off-the-field stuff attached to him, but he's a guy that doesn't want to play in Houston. That was the story before all the massage things came up. So what do you expect to happen? Or is it going to be a big letdown, no big deals are made, or what do you think?
I think that there aren't going to be a lot of big deals. I mean, we're sitting here in Philadelphia, and Zach Ertz, the tight end for the Eagles, is definitely going to be dealt in the next few days, they hope, because they're going to be able to lower they're going to get under the cap a little more, and that'll allow them. They haven't signed a rookie yet. So they have to get under the cap some more to sign their rookies, their draft picks. If I'm an NFL team, I would be foolish to trade for Deshaun Watson because you don't know when and if he's going to play again. If I'm the Packers, there is no way I'm trading Aaron Rodgers until it becomes a situation where we are at complete loggerheads and with no chance of ever, you know, of his ever playing for us again, because he's too good, and our entire ability to compete for an NFC title is tied up in him. Jordan Love is clearly not ready to do that now. I don't know if he'll ever be a great NFL quarterback, but he's never started a game. So without Rodgers, who people conveniently forget was the MVP, the Packers are done. They're doomed. So I wouldn't trade him. Julio Jones, you know, he's been linked to the Seahawks. He'd be a great weapon for Russell Wilson, but they've already got a couple great weapons. They've got Lockett. They've got Metcalf. They've got some great players, but you throw Julio Jones in there, and now all of a sudden, holy smokes, if I'm Russell Wilson, I'm really happy. But I don't think there's a lot else going to go on, at least not on June 2nd. There'll be some smaller deals as teams try to cut salary cap requirements, but I don't think the big boys are going anywhere.
Been some bad behavior in the NBA as far as fans go,
seriously.
And we were just talking about, you know, like I saw a thing the other day, Michael, on Mike Ditka, Football Life, and how he took a fan out. And Bob asked me, you know, one of the questions he posed is, you know, would you ever think about tackling one of those guys that went on the field? And I was saying, you know what, if you do try to tackle him and he puts a move on you or jukes you, you're done. You're never going to hear the end of that. Never hear
you're
the
right,
end of it.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I was going
to
just ask you, what do you think should be the repercussions for some of these guys? They got to do something other than just arrest them. Make it hurt.
Tase them.
Publicly shame them.
Well, look, here's the way. My hero is Mike Curtis.
Yeah.
For those of you too young to remember Mike Curtis, he was playing middle linebacker for the Baltimore Colts when some moron ran onto the field.
He ended his career in Seattle, by the way.
Yeah, he laid him out. He laid this guy out. Look it up on the YouTube machine.
Yeah, seen it.
And afterwards, somebody asked him about it. He said he came into my office, you know, and so he. That's great. But look, I'm an NBA player, right? So out comes some moron who wants to tap the backboard. if I try to tackle him, as you said, first off, you're opening yourself up to ridicule if you don't get him. But now you're going to try to tackle some guy and bring him to the ground on a hard floor. You get hurt trying to do this.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. My favorite story was when Gary Payton was playing for, I think it was when he was playing for the Sonics, he came to Philadelphia. He's about to inbound the ball on the sideline when all of a sudden a fan walks right up to him. Payton kind of gives him that cocked head stare, right? You know it.
Mm-hmm.
And the security comes up and grabs the fan. Afterwards, somebody says to Gary Payton in the locker room, "Gary, were you scared when that fan came up to you?" And he gave this head cocked head stare again. He goes, "Man, you know where I grew up? You think I'm going to be afraid of some stupid drunk fan in Philadelphia?" So it doesn't behoove the athletes. You know, the two biggest ones were Mike Curtis laying that guy out, and the time Rick Monday grabbed the American flag that the two guys were trying to burn in the center field of Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, it seems like it's happened in groups recently. I mean, we saw the big popcorn thing with Russell Westbrook. We saw, you know, a guy at Madison Square Garden spitting on the back of Trae Young when he's getting ready to inbound a ball. Somebody threw a water bottle at Kyrie Irving, and then this goofball gets tackled as he just crosses the baseline. I mean,
and then was it the fans in Utah spewing, bile and racist, profanities at people? I don't understand it. Kevin Durant said it best. This isn't the circus. We're not carnival performers. We're not circus animals. We're human beings playing a game for your entertainment. And I don't care how much you think it makes your city look like you're tougher or tougher on players by doing something that is reprehensible, but you shouldn't be doing it. And anybody who does it, the first thing is you're banned from that building for life. You never come back. You are prosecuted. It says it on the ticket, prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And I don't mean get a lawyer and cut a deal and you get probation and you pay a fine. Go to jail. You run out on a court, go to jail. You throw a water bottle at someone, that's assault. Go to jail. And if I'm Kyrie Irving, I'm pressing civil charges. Even if I don't need the money, just so this slob has to pay a few $1,000s in legal fees, it will be worth it. Make him hurt. The knucklehead that poured the popcorn, as a Philadelphia fan, I'm furious at him, not just because it was a low-class, cheap, ridiculous move, but it was, again, it gives everybody the chance to take a shot at Philadelphia. Okay? Up comes the Santa Claus incident. Up comes the Jimmy Johnson thing.
The batteries.
Up comes the Michael Irvin situation. The batteries. All that stuff. So you have once again given everybody license to rip our city and its fans. So for that, you should be ridiculed and brought to your knees by the people in Philadelphia. Should do it. Forget the cops.
I like that at least the people around him pointed him out. I like that you saw people go, "No, it was this guy right here pointing to him."
No doubt. And I'm happy about that. Yeah. That's good. You got to do that. And if you're a fan and you see someone doing that, forget the snitches get stitches thing. You let the person know the cops and the security know who did it.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can follow him on Twitter at Daily Hombre, and you can find him here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Michael, great stuff. We'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
Wow, he's on the landline. He sent me a text earlier to say he was going to be on his cell phone.
Yeah, he got back just in time. Called him on the cell.
Okay.
Said, "Oh, I'm back. Get me on the phone." So he could do the slam.
What's he going to do? Hold it
he's
up
gonna
and go,
hit that
beep.
End button really hard. All right, coming up, what would a Seahawks, we're going to play a hypothetical here. What would a Seahawks trade for Julio Jones actually look like if it were to go through? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Hey, the Mariners are taking on the A's tonight, game two of their series, and the T-Mobile Park roof will be open. Most certainly. I think it's over 80 degrees outside right now, so that'd be a good idea to leave that open. That's the Mariners Roof Report, covered by Acton's Quality Roofing. All right, we talked about this earlier with John Clayton, the idea of Julio Jones. That's the big story, in case you guys are just tuning in. That was over the weekend that the Seahawks had apparently made contact with the Atlanta Falcons inquiring about Julio Jones, and who knows how far those conversations went. And then the other part of that story was that Russell Wilson and Julio Jones have had conversations amongst themselves. as to what it would be like to play with each other on the same team. And the fantasy football side of most people, I think, look at this and go, are you kidding me? A weapon like that? Russell Wilson with DK, Tyler, and Julio Jones? Unstoppable. It'd be great. Listen, if they make the deal, I'm not going to complain. I'd love to see it. I mean, it's a for-now deal. He's 32 years old. He's coming off an injury. I don't know that he's going to get faster or more durable or better than he's been. So you're probably catching him descending rather than ascending. So,
yeah, and his 11th year coming up?
Yeah. I mean, he's a brilliant receiver. He's a phenomenal receiver. But the reality of it happening, for a lot of reasons, it makes you feel like, all right, this is, it's a conversation. It's John doing his due diligence. Yeah, John Schneider doing it, making the call. Yeah, I'll take a call. I'll make a call. That's what I do as a GM.
They always do.
Yeah, and that's what he should be doing in case the Falcons said, you know, we really love that Rashad Penny fellow you got there. We'll trade him straight across. I mean, you never know. You never know. Maybe
like
it's
that, wouldn't you?
Maybe it's a Penny LJ Collier combo.
Throw in
like
LJ Collier. Yeah.
But, I mean, in all sincerity, that's what he needs to check out. You never know what they got their eye on somebody on your roster or some deal you never thought possible is out there. So, you know, why not? But the reality of it, when you look at the salary, when you look at the fact that they supposedly want a first-round pick, the Seahawks don't have a first-round pick next year.
Well, LJ Collier and Penny, I'm not sure I would take that just because what do you do with Julio Jones? And look,
throw him the ball.
Yeah, but what about DK and what about Tyler? And then when do you run the ball? I mean, now you're talking about what? 75% of the time you're going to be, I mean, if they all get targeted, you know, 100 times like they have been over the past few years. Now, Julio's coming off an injury, but, you know, the year before 2019, he had 99 targets. I'm sorry, 99
catches probably.
Yeah, he had 99 catches and then 157 targets. You know, same thing the year before, 113, so just 51.
Yeah, for the Seahawks, he had 129 targets for DK, 132 for Tyler, and then third on the list, David Moore at 47.
Yeah, it's a big drop-off there. But, you know, look, there's just – you've got to premier. It is so what they don't need, okay? So you would have to give up a first-rounder.
It's a luxury item.
Yeah, it would be expensive. And then, you know, look, I still say – and I'm really pulling for Ethan Posick. I think he's a good player, but – you know, that would be the one position. If you want to get something for Russ and you're going to spend a lot of money, get a Pro Bowl center. You know, and you can't just go get one because, you know, Corey Linsley
signed.
The tree's
not in the backyard.
Yeah, there's no tree. You can pick them off the tree. Yeah, Linsley ended up signing with the Chargers. And, you know, Alex Mack, who was an older guy, but, you know, from Atlanta, I think he was Cleveland first. But anyway, yeah, he ends up with the 49ers. So there's really nobody out there. But, yeah, this is not something that you – but they're kicking the tires on it just like they always do with every position or every time a deal like this comes up. And then the other thing I was gonna say, Russell has had conversations with him. You know, I had imagined that conversation being, hey, man, how's it going? Hey, good. Hey, I sure would love to throw you the ball. Yeah. Okay. That's it.
You think that's how that went?
That's the entire
conversation.
Wouldn't
that be fun to play together? Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah. All right. So what'd you have for dinner last night?
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
I was like, we just talked football.
Yeah.
the whole thing is, it's kind of fun to imagine because that's, you know, whoever tweeted that out. Can you imagine having those three receivers? Yeah, it would be fantastic. But, you know, the whole game is not 7-on-7.
Well, and it's far from their most pressing need. They just spent their first pick in this year's draft on a wide receiver. They have Freddie Swain from last year. They've got guys that they're still trying to develop to see if they're going to be anything on this team.
Right.
So who knows what Eskridge is going to be. Maybe, you know, what does that do to his development? How does he get on the field? It's for a lot of reasons, it's not realistic. The only thing that keeps me hedging my bets is their history. You know, all of the moves they've made with high-profile players that have seemed like, wait, they just pulled off a Percy Harvin move. They just brought in Jimmy Graham. They brought in Jamal Adams. They brought in Jadeveon Clowney, where we were like, didn't see that. Those were similar conversations where you'd be – I remember even Clowney coming up, and we're like, well, yeah, that'll never happen. But, yeah, sure, that'd be great. Or, you know what I mean? It was just sort of out of the realm of possibility, and they've made it happen, and they did it with Dwayne Brown and, to a lesser extent, Sheldon Richardson. And so there's a pretty strong track record of John and Pete making moves that you didn't see coming with high-profile players.
Well, and last year, and by the way, the Jadeveon Clowney thing, the reason why I didn't think that that was serious is because Jim was the one who brought it up in the beginning.
You don't want to give that any credence, huh?
Yeah. But no, I mean, look, that we talked about this last year. You remember when everybody was saying, oh, they don't go for it, and they're, why aren't they in the, you know, some of these big deals that are going on? Yeah, Jimmy Graham, Percy Harvin, you know, Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. So, yeah, they've always been in on it. So they're gonna kick the tires on it. But it just doesn't – this one would be – same thing with Carlos Dunlap, by the way. I remember when he was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, this guy wants to be traded too. And I was like, yeah, that's great, but probably never happened. Sure enough, it happens. So, but this one would be a head-scratcher.
It would be. It'd be, I mean, because so many things would have to happen in terms of salary. Just to fit his salary in there, you'd have to – probably work with Bobby, work with Russell, maybe some other, maybe somebody gets cut. I mean, they're just, you know, the amount of money he's still owed versus what they've got to spend, it's not close to lining up. So.
Well, and remember, you know, he, Pete Carroll alluded to it at the end of the season where he said, you know, I don't want to be having to face cover two, which means no safety up in the box.
Yeah.
And that means we can't run the ball. That's what that meant. And so, yeah, why would they then go and spend a whole bunch of money when you could be putting money into, you know, the running game?
All right, coming up, is the Mariners' win streak a sign of things to come? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Got the Mariners and the A's doing business tonight. What are you looking forward to most in this game, Dave? We were just talking during the break about we're both excited to see the game. Mariners are on a roll. They've won 5 in a row, 7 of 10. And you've got some guys coming back. You got the injury to Kyle Lewis, which is a big bummer. And we'll see how long, for those that weren't aware of the news or you're just tuning in, Kyle Lewis placed on the IL with a slight tear in his meniscus in his right knee, the oft-injured right knee. So Scott Service, not real clear on the timeline for him.
So you brought Trammell up for him.
Taylor Trammell's been recalled.
You've got Jared Kelnick getting moved down into the six hole.
Yep.
And then you got Marco Gonzalez coming back. And I broke it down, texted into 710-710, into two different categories. First, what's most important of those three things? What's most important that it works? And then the other one is, what do you most want to see just for your own? You know, so for that, just like it's fun, what I would really love to see is, number one, Taylor Trammell come back and just...
We're on the same page.
Yeah. And then...
4 for 4 with 4 home runs.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then secondly, you know, second is Kelnick, which it probably should be... Well, here's what I... Okay, so what do I most just in my heart want to see? Trammell, then Kelnick, then Marco. Because, you know, the pitching just is, like, just okay for me. You know, I want to see these young guys hit because that's what it's all about. I don't worry too much about Marco. But really, what's most important is probably Marco. You know, I mean, that's one of your leaders. And we kind of talked about it off air. Like, that you really need him. He's your ace. Mm-hmm. You really need him to be able to come back. Now, I'm not putting all this pressure on just one game. But, yeah, if I look at what's most important, Trammell comes in last. You know, it goes Marco, Kelnick getting hits in the six hole, and then Trammell. You know, because look, Trammell, and same thing with Kelnick, really. We talked to Mike Blowers about this. It's like, look, it takes a couple of times. You know, it takes a couple of times for most guys. We talked about Griffey, who told us, after his first hit, he went 0 for 16. You know, Mike Trout got sent down. You know, he was a 0 for 20 something. I mean, it happens to everybody. So, and we're just in the middle of that process right now. If this was like the, you know, third call up or whatever, then you might be a little bit more urgent. But honestly, it's not really that urgent considering their age and their experience, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, Marco is the most important at this point because you're looking at two guys who are developing. And you want them to have success, but if they go 0 for 4 tonight, you're not going, oh, boy. Right. If Marco goes out there and gets lit up, you're still not worried because you know who he is. But I'd wonder, all right, is he 100%? Is it just work, you know, shaking the rust off, or what's going on? He didn't look right. He's walking guys. He's giving up hits. And the other part is, I don't think we're going to see him for very long. I haven't seen anything official about a pitch count unless they've tweeted it out recently. But I don't know that he's going to be out there long. They're going to probably just baby step him into, you know, stretching him out. But he's most important to what you're ultimately trying to get done here. He is your ace, as you said. He's the guy that you count on. You know what you're going to get out of him. You know what he can do at this level, and he's a part of your future as well. The other guys are certainly part of the future, but at a much slower pace. I mean, you know, Tremel's 23, Kelnick's 21. They've spent hardly any time between the two of them at the AAA level, so they're kind of getting exposed, thrown into the fire, so to speak, to the big league level at a very early point of their career. We'll see what they do. So I'm not panicking with any of them. The one that would worry me most if it didn't go well would be Marco, only because I'd just be wondering about health. Not is he good. The other guys you're wondering, can they do it at this level? We don't know. We've got no idea if either one of them can get it done at this level. So those are the question marks. I'm excited to see them. I hope they have success. And I hope, you know, on some small level, I hope this was humbling for Kelnick to a point, not to discourage him, not to chip away at his confidence, but to just truly understand this is a different world at this level, clearly. And I think he knows that now, if he didn't before. You know, I keep going back to those comments he made last year where he was sort of upset he didn't get called up, and saying, I know for a fact I could have helped that team. That facts are a little different now that you've been there, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe this will be a benefit. I could picture it. Couldn't you picture him 2 years, 5 years from now going, man, I remember when I was a rookie, I just thought I knew everything, and boy, did I learn a quick lesson. Don't you feel like you could hear him having that conversation?
I'm not sure we're going to get that kind of reflection from Jared.
You don't
Kelnick.
Think so?
what we're seeing so far, in you know, I'm not saying it in a negative way. I just, you know, some guys are, you know, I was writing down notes earlier because you were talking about this team in your email, you know, how they're clutch, you know, and there are some guys, you know, some athletes that they want the ball in their hand on the last play, right? Doesn't really apply to football, but I mean, they're the guy that I want to take the last shot. And then there's, you know, other guys that are just too young and dumb to know any better, you know? So whether you're a rookie or you're like a guy like Lenny Dykstra, who is just kind of like, oh, who's
dumb.
That guy? Yeah, I'll go rip him.
Yeah.
And he did. And
I'll rake your face.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe that's, you know, and I'm not saying he's dumb, obviously, but maybe Kelnick just doesn't have that kind of intimidation, or, you know, he doesn't get intimidated. He's not afraid of the moment. He's just right now trying to figure it out. And, you know, look, it happens to everyone. So, but I kind of like that. So, yeah, for that reason, I would say I wouldn't mind if he was like Lenny Dykstra. We don't want him to follow his post-career.
It's been a wild ride post-career for Lenny.
Yeah, his trials and tribulations that he's gone through anyway. But, I feel like maybe he falls into that category. Maybe 5 years from now, he's like, yeah, well, you know, I got through it.
Yeah, I think there is a benefit to it. As painful as it is for him right now, as painful as it is to watch, I think there can absolutely be a benefit. And if part of that is being humbled to a certain extent, to where maybe you get out of your own way, and you don't know everything, you're not the king of the world, you know, right out of the box. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some adjustment. You're going to have to change certain things in how you approach. You're going to change your approach. Okay, then it's all good. It's going to lead to something better. Right now, yeah, this hurts. It's rough. What I don't understand is the people that, you know, it was funny before Kelnick was called up, we were sort of debating, is it the right time? Is it too soon? All that. How many texts did we get of people going, he needs to be here now. He should have been here last year. And the fact that he's not is a sign that the front office is inept and all that stuff. I mean, people demanding he be here, and he's going to take off like a rocket. And now I'm seeing texts from people say, how has he not been sent down? Should have been sent down 2 weeks ago, and he's terrible. He's not going to be that superstar, but he said. I was like, my goodness, man, there's no middle ground.
Well, let's just hope that those aren't the same people texting in, you know. If it's two different, you know, camps, fine. You're finally texting in, oh, I knew Kelnick was going to be terrible. Well, first of all, it's just a little bit too early.
A little premature there, yeah.
To determine that. So, but, yeah, it's pretty funny what you get. What was the guy the other day calling him the powder or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the pouty prince or something like that. Yeah, he seems to have rubbed some people wrong, you know, that his confidence is too much for some people. I kind of like it. But it doesn't mean he doesn't need to be humbled on some level, you know, to a point where maybe he's just more open to learning or more open to suggestion or more who knows what. You know, when you're that confident and you've got all the answers, maybe you're hearing instruction from people and nodding your head, and you're like, I need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the advice, Grandpa. you know, I'm gonna do this my way. This is how I got here. There's a reason I've got the spotlight on me. You never know how they're receiving advice or information from people.
Well, and everybody has is, you know, I mean, look, Kelnick's a different cup of tea. I mean, you look at the difference between him and Taylor Trammell, and Trammell just, and I'm not saying, you know, one's right or wrong, whatever works for them, you know, that's what it has to be. But Taylor Trammell, much more my kind of guy, you know, we interviewed a member afterwards.
It's impossible.
Like, this wasn't even like an interview. It was like just three guys talking. Thanks, guy. I mean, he's thanking us.
I'm glad he's back up. Maybe we'll get him back on the show now. Maybe we could put in a request for Trammell and get him back and talk to him about his time down in AAA. And
love it.
He was. I would recommend that conversation to anybody if you want to go back and check it out on the podcast page. I mean, it's impossible not to root for this guy. I don't know if he's going to be a great player or not, but I am pulling for him with everything I've got for him to be that great player because he's the kind of guy you want to be a star.
Well, hopefully he can get it started tonight, man.
What do you think?
Never look back.
Prediction, does he get a hit tonight?
I'm going to say yes.
Gets a hit.
It's mostly me wanting him to get one, but
that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Mike Blowers, John Clayton, and El Hombre, Michael Bradley. If you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast tab. Scroll down to our picture and click on that. You'll find everything you missed waiting there for you each and every day. You got the Mariners. You got the A's coming up in this series. Pregame show coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.